Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing.
Today, we're joined by workplace well-being innovator, human behavior researcher, and the best-selling author of the book Work Life Well Lived, Kelly Mackin. Kelly is the CEO of Motives Met, a platform that empowers people to create their best work life and workplace with original research insights and tools like the Human Needs Assessment.
Kelly's journey from ill-being to well-being ignited her dedication for helping people cultivate health and happiness in their lives. Her research shows that only 16% of people are thriving at work, and her mission is to change that.
Through her no BS approach to well-being and groundbreaking research that challenges the status quo, Kelly helps create thriving cultures where people can be well and perform well at work.
Her expertise spans mindfulness and meditation to fostering psychological safety, from meaningful team workshops to leadership coaching.
Hailing from sunny San Diego, California, you can often find her soaking up a sunset, playing beach volleyball, or sparring in the boxing ring.
Welcome to the pod, Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me, ladies. I'm looking forward to chatting today.
So let's get started. In your book, Work Life Well Lived, you talk about the noise and contradicting advice around what's most important at work for things like well-being and engagement. Why is this a difficult obstacle in the work world, do you think?
Well, it's really tough whether you're just kind of an individual looking for greater fulfillment and happiness at work, or if you're a leader of a team or even CEO of a company, because there's just so much noise out there and it's hard to really work through what's true and who to believe. You know, you'll have one social media influencer telling you it's all about hustling to reach your potential. But then a different one's like, nah, it's not about the hustle. It's about prioritizing your work-life balance. And someone else will say, no, it's about the flexibility to work anywhere in the world with a margarita in hand. And as a leader, you're being told from this TEDx talk or this, you know, well-being report or on this webinar that you should put purpose on a pedestal if you want a thriving culture. But someone says, no, it's about belonging, or no, it's about being the best boss you can be. And then even research can't seem to really make up its dang mind about what employees want and need most at work. Research will reveal the number one thing an employee wants is appreciation. But other research says, no, it's about growth opportunities or the walk out the door. So there's good intentions behind all of these conversations and advice. And it's amazing that this has become a hot topic of conversation. That's really where me and my team got started, of saying, hey, this is amazing. We're using well-being and work in the same sentence, right? That we've moved beyond just productivity and performance to culture and engagement, and now really finally to mental health and well-being at work. But we went, how are we supposed to really figure out what the truth is? We're drowning in information, but starving for real wisdom. And so that's what kind of led us on our journey to go, well, what really is the truth, given there's so much contradictory advice out there?
So what's the truth?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you.
You got to tell us. Research,
more data points than I care to remember. We discovered that all of this is true and none of this is essentially true. So there are 28 psychological, emotional, and social needs, what we call motives, that are what thriving at work is all about. And we've developed a framework that makes this really easy to grasp, these 28 needs. They're on our website at motivesmet.com. But for example, these 28 needs fall into 10 overarching domains. So in the freedom domain, there's the autonomy, flexibility, and free expression motives. In the meaning domain, there's the passion and purpose motives. But work-life harmony is a motive, appreciation, self-esteem, free expression. So all of these motives matter. They're what, when you think about creating a people-first culture, well, it's putting people's human needs first. So this is the heart of what we're talking about. But what we also discovered is that what I need most to thrive at work, what I need most to be well and perform well in my job is going to be very different than Jennifer, what you need most, and Kim, what you need most. Well-being is personal. It's not universal. So there is no one hierarchy of needs. Sorry, Maslow, you got it wrong. It's about what each person's unique hierarchy is. And how do we honor that and look at what's most important to ourselves and to each other?
And, you know, I'm a big fan of your work and I've obviously done your assessment and I thought it was hilarious. One of my needs was like the managerial support, but I work for myself. So I was like, oh, well, that explains a lot. But it is so interesting. So I know you've taken a really scientific approach to it. What are the main insights you can share with our listeners? Just first of all, about your approach, like why should they believe this over all the other noise that they're hearing? What's the backup for what we're telling them? And I fully ascribe to your method of looking at this on an individual basis, but I think people are like, oh my God, that just sounds like a lot of work. So let's hear the backup first, and then we can talk about how they can use that to implement it in their organizations.
Sure. Yeah, well, really, the research doesn't lie at the end of the day. You know, we didn't go into the data going, we think there's 28 of these needs. I mean, we studied emotions, stress points, concerns, different pain points at work. And really what came out of the research was these 28 motives. And behind these motives are really how we do want to feel at work and how we don't want to feel. When these needs are met, we're going to feel all the good stuff. When these needs aren't met, we're going to feel all the bad stuff. But it's embracing the truth that we are human beings with these human needs. And that really is the core of well-being at work. And 28 can seem like an overwhelming number. That's not the first time we've heard that. And actually, when I was on another podcast, the podcast host was saying, oh my God, it's the Everest of leadership. You know, there's 28 of these things that you got to care about. And I said, yeah, that's true, but it's the ugly truth. And that's what we're saying. A lot of people want to hand you on a silver platter. Just find your purpose and that's it. You're going to be good. Your career is going to be great. Or just give your team the growth opportunities. But that's a lie. Quite frankly, it's BS. So based on those insights, we went, how do we make this easier? How do we help people take these insights and put them into action? And that's where we've developed all sorts of free resources and tools and services. And the big one being our human needs assessment, where when you take the 15-minute online assessment, you uncover what are your top five motives and support five motives. Because as Jim Collins says, if you have more than three priorities, you have none. We kind of cheated. We give you your top five, not your top three. But the idea is trying to use 28 motives to navigate your career decisions isn't going to work real well. So it's going, hey, my work life is going to change in seasons. What I need most now is probably going to change in 10 years from now is probably different than the me 10 years prior, right? So how can I focus on where I am in my career today? How can I focus as a leader on what each person on my team needs most today? I'm only one person. This isn't about perfection. This is actually about making things more realistic. So what does each person on my team need most and why? And that's going to allow me to step into my role to be the best human-centered leader I can be.
So Kelly, I love everything that you're saying because conversations about personalizing the employee experience are things that we've been talking about for years, right? One size fits none. We know that. The challenge though is leaders. Managers. It's about training managers or helping managers to understand how to personalize the employee experience. You can't do that in policies and procedures. That's not HR's job to personalize the employee experience. It really kind of, that rubber hits the road where the manager and the employee are meeting. What resources do you have or how can you help managers, especially junior managers or young people looking to build careers in leadership? Because in my opinion, and from what you're saying, this is the key. So how do we give that key to the people who can really unlock the potential?
I love what you were saying. We call it the three T's, time, training, tools. It's like, if you as a leader don't have that, if you don't give your managers that, you cannot expect this to happen. And so that's, you know, again, kind of coming back to these insights are great, but then how do you take real action? So what we designed is our five-step motive methodology. And I talk about it a lot in the book, but it's essentially a five-step roadmap that you need to walk as a leader. But another really key part is you got to walk with your team. Your job is not to create the best culture ever. It's actually to co-create it collectively, creating a team-wide movement to keep these 28 needs thriving and not suffering. So the five steps are to understand, be mindful of, evaluate, communicate, and then ultimately meet these motives for yourself, the people you work with, and the people that you lead. So to give you just a real quick, like, what's one actionable thing you can do? Motive conversations are missing conversations at work. Ooh, point blank.
I love that.
And silence, that silence costs us big time. We're all trying to get the work done. We're busy. Now we're more remote than ever. Conversations around what we need most at work really aren't happening. So then they're going to go unmet, and we're not going to see small problems before they become big problems. So a really key aspect for leaders is to know, hey, this is what really matters to Jennifer. This is what's really a high priority on my team. Now let me ask really good questions and engaging ones related to these motives, and I'm going to get so much good information back. Because it's great to ask an employee, hey, are you happy here or do you hate it here? And that conversation isn't even happening enough. Our research found 33% of people said in the last year that conversation never happened. 31% said only once. But I'm going to get so much more information from my team if I ask stuff like, hey, what's one area of your job you'd like more freedom in and why? You know, if you had a work well-being journey that could grant you one wish to create more work-life harmony on our team, what would it be? You know, what is the work that's most meaningful to you, and how much of your time do you spend doing that work? So when you look at these 28 motives, it's starting to get deep into what matters most and then asking those good questions, which really opens up the door to psychological safety. Because it's tough to walk into your boss's office and say, you're micromanaging me and it's driving me crazy. Or, hey, team, I don't feel appreciated. But when you create the space for these conversations to happen and you bring awesome questions, that opens the door to brave spaces with greater vulnerability.
I think detractors would say the reason why they don't ask is because they're probably afraid to hear it, and they don't believe that they have the flexibility to be able to make this personalized work experience for everybody. Or what we hear often in HR is managers are afraid that employees are going to ask for things that are unrealistic and it's going to cost a lot of money. Kelly, talk to us though about the costs of not doing this. Talk to us about the realistic expectations of employees today relative to what managers are most afraid of hearing, because I think there's a huge divide.
There is a huge divide. And we say these motive conversations are your best stay interview strategy, so you don't have to have the exit interviews. Essentially, our data proves it time and time again. People whose motives are met are twice as likely, or people whose motives are unmet are twice as likely or more to walk out the door.
Amazing.
So the cost of turnover, we know it, right? There's so much data in the world. The cost, the negative impact on morale and culture when people leave, especially if they're top performers, isn't great. So you're either going to be forced to make these changes, or you can proactively make the changes to create a better work experience, a better work culture.
Happiness is contagious, right?
Yes, 100%. And something else, I literally just had a conversation with someone yesterday about this, so it's top of mind, of the idea that your team wants to know you're advocating and fighting for them. They don't expect you to win all the time. But if they know that you care, if they know that, hey, I just want to get to know you as a human being, what's important to you? Tell me about your life. Where do you struggle with work-life harmony if that's important? Hey, you're looking to innovate and create. Well, what does that look like for you? I just want to get to know you. And then I'll support where I can. So it's not about perfection, but showing that care, advocating where you can, and saying that you're going to do what you can to optimize what they need goes such a long way.
I think that's so interesting because I'm thinking back. I believe a motivation conversation has come up once in my entire career with a boss when he informed me that I was obviously motivated by money, and it very much came across as an accusation, which I was very ashamed of. I'm like, is it obvious that I'm here for money? How'd I let that happen? You know, and that was it, you know, and it's like, oh, I felt really bad. Like that wasn't the corporate culture to obviously be focused on money, but it did come out in my assessment as one of my top five. So that's been consistent throughout my life. Obviously.
Working for money. Huh?
I know.
Right?
I know, right? Just one of the largest companies in the country. They couldn't afford me, obviously, but anyways, so I mean, it's so true. I think opening up that conversation is a big deal. I think that's a huge step. You would make so much progress just by doing that. I love that advice. What are some other major mind shifts that we need people to kind of grasp during this conversation in order to kind of get them on board, at least be curious enough to read your book or look into this a little bit more? Because I really think it is very scientifically based. And I think if anyone's really serious about getting this down, they should really look at the work you're doing.
Well, thank you. And I think a great one is to touch on what you said of you were feeling like judged, right? That you were being judged for what you need most, what's most important to you. So one of the biggest mindset shifts is around this idea that there is no favorites when it comes to motives. There is no right answer. That we need to embrace motive diversity because certain motives can be put on a pedestal. They can be kind of given all the love in a culture, while other ones can be judged, dismissed, or misunderstood, right? Fun can be thought of as frivolous. I don't really care about it, right? Or work-life harmony, that's a luxury, not a necessity. So leaders especially have to really take a step back and go, where am I holding biases? And really everyone on a team, what I think is most important, I might tend to think you think is most important, but that is not the case. And sometimes these needs hold friction with one another and conflict. And you can see on our framework, these 28 motives go around this wheel, if you will, and motives across from one another hold more tension. So it can be tough, whether it's internally or externally, sometimes to meet motives simultaneously. So we need to shift from this idea that it's all going to be kind of perfect, this work happiness delusion, as we like to call it, to realistic, you know, what we call the attainable dream of a work life well lived. Saying, how can we live in the tension of these needs well and do it together as a team? So that's going to mean compromise. It's going to mean good communication. It's going to mean tough choices. And it's going to mean not just caring about me, myself, and I, but also caring about the team. But not just caring about the team at the cost of myself. And that when you get teams to understand, tying back even into that manager conversation we said of being afraid of like, ooh, I'm not going to be able to do all the things. When you get a team to understand, oh my God, there's 28 of these motives. We all have different ones. You know, I might care about this. You really don't care about that. As a leader, you're trying to meet all these things. We're trying to create a culture where all these are healthy. That's tough. That helps them have compassion for you and understand this isn't going to be perfect, but how can we make it the best it can be?
So Kelly, it's interesting because something that I've done quite a bit of speaking about is the idea of this unspoken rule that was shattered during COVID, right? The unspoken rule that like, I am a one-dimensional person. I come to work every single day. I work and I go home. I have no kids. I have no life. I have no challenges. This is who I am. And nobody really cared to find out more about employees until we entered their bedrooms, their bathrooms, their kitchen tables. We saw their pets. We heard their babies crying and we knew about all of, you know, their messy beds. And so we can't unknow now what we know. And it's fascinating as we ask employees to start returning to the office, what we're also starting to see is companies trying to go back to that unspoken rule. And what you're saying, and what I love about what you're saying is you can't do that. You don't want to do that. And there is science to back it up. We probably never should have done it before, but how would you say that this has almost, you know, been highlighted or underlined by the fact that that unspoken rule is shattered forever. We know more about our employees than we ever have.
Yes, yes, we do. And people have a different mindset now post-COVID. And the work well-being movement was already underway, but man, COVID sped it up. People have changed their hearts and minds around what they desire and deserve at work. And they've never really been okay with ill-being or feeling like they were a number and not a human at work. But now they know they deserve that. And the power balance has shifted. And smart, successful companies and leaders aren't going to attract the top talent and keep them if they want to shift back to dehumanized workplaces. Because the reality is we can't shut off our humanity when we walk through the door or even jump on the Zoom room. So you have to find a way for our human emotions to live at work in a productive way. And that's, again, one of the things that this research kind of helps you do is go, okay, if you're feeling stressed, overwhelmed, burnt out, which one of your motives isn't being met? What are the needs that are suffering here? And then how can we kind of identify that and take action? But the reality is those emotions are going to be there. You can't pretend they're not going to be, and you do yourself and your team a disservice to try to pretend it's any other way.
So Kelly, having been through it, I think to call your assessment merely an assessment is really underselling it, because there's a tremendous amount of information, resources, and tools that come out in that assessment, including, you know, I think the right questions to be asking and all that sort of thing. It's very comprehensive. So if somebody's interest has been piqued, just walk us through, you know, how they might be able to use your assessment and framework to get this rolling in their own organization.
So for, you know, the individual team members, it's really simple. We set it up, send your team the assessment. It takes about 15 minutes to complete. And then they get a really awesome personalized report that includes what their top motives are, but then all sorts of information related to meeting those motives, reflection questions, and probably my favorite part, which is developing your own motive story. We all have a story behind why these needs matter, why they're driving us in our current workplace today, the ones that are best met, the ones that we're struggling with. And when people develop those stories and share them, that creates such a deeper connection. So it's really cool for employees to kind of go through that exercise and create their action plan. But then for leaders, you're given, like you said, all sorts of resources. You're given a motives leadership hub that's interactive. You can see all your team's results and kind of your team motive map. People love to see, based on our framework, where their team is falling. And it sparks a lot of really interesting conversations around where there's connection, where there's disconnection, and different perspectives. They're given all sorts of amazing questions to ask around these needs, as well as different tips and next steps to develop your leadership action plan to create a culture where these motives can be met. And then a lot of teams love to do a post-assessment workshop with us, or an offsite, or an experience, kind of depending on what their time constraint and goals are. But it's amazing what will happen when you get people in the same room to get to talk about these motives and what matters most to them. It's like team building 2.0 without the awkward icebreakers that people hate, or the forced fun. You know, you're getting to talk about what you care most about. And what we find is it kind of bridges your past, present, and future. And sharing those stories is so important that you understand some of these needs are really important to me because they were not met at this last job, and this is where I came from. And this is my hope for my future and my career. And that's why this matters so much to me. And these conversations will not happen without these intentional spaces to make them happen. So that's probably one of my favorite things we do, is those kind of workshops, and then leadership workshops. So we do leadership coaching that really has leaders and managers reflect on how they're going to lead their team to co-create a culture where these motives are thriving together with everybody.
And then who is your desired audience for the book? Like, who should pick that up? Is it somebody who's already involved with you, but they're interested in more, or someone like us who's just curious about the topic in general? Or who is your intended audience for the book? And congratulations on writing a book on top of all of this, by the way.
Thank you. It was, you know, it was 2.5 year journey, but you know, it was part one of my motives is future success. It's been my motive since I started Motives Met and took the assessment. My dream has always been to write a book. And so, you know, I made it happen, but that was a big part of my work well-being, And that actually meant I had a little bit less work-life balance. So that's what I'm saying. It's not one size fits all. For me, my dream of having the book come true is probably the biggest aspect of my well-being at work in the last year. Even though there were some early mornings and some late nights writing away.
Right.
The book is really for anybody who wants to be empowered to create their best work life and workplace with no BS well-being is how we say it. The book comes with a free code to take the assessment, which is really great. So readers love being able to take a personalized journey through the book based on your personal top needs. But the book is kind of broken out into three sections. It's you as the individual. It's thinking about you and your work relationships. And then the third part is that leadership standpoint. So it's really kind of a broad audience in that sense, but really for anybody who wants to feel like they have the confidence and clarity to take a personalized approach to health and happiness at work.
I love that. I think it could really frame sort of your job search too, you know, make it have you looking at prospective companies in a different way, because I think the old way is kind of like, well, our company culture is this, and if you align with it, you'll be motivated. And it's like, well, there's zero chance that your mission and vision, you know, are going to meet all the top five motives of everybody you hire. And that's kind of typically how companies have always looked at it, I think. All right. Well, we're all entrepreneurs here. So let's talk about burnout a little bit. I know that your story, your backstory, how you got into all this, you didn't grow up wanting to do this as your job. So you can tell us a little bit about that. I know you cover it in quite a bit of detail in the book too, but you know, like I'm fresh off this topic because I've had the stomach flu for the last couple of days and man, you know, I took 2 days in bed and like the bargaining, the shame, the guilt, the, you know, the should I not, the how can this be happening? What should I be doing right now? Like that conditioning, I don't know if it's just, you know, when Kim and I were born or what the hell, like, you know, people our age, but man, I was like, Jennifer, you know better. You know Kelly. You're going to be talking to her later today. She would be very upset with you right now. So tell us what this, because we've talked about, you know, it's sort of like in terms of motivation, but what's the connection with motives and your burnout at work?
First of all, I feel you. Even when we know the things, it's tough to sometimes do the things. It really, really is. And one of the things that I found in burnout through some of our research too, is the expectation around it. It's the frustration of, I thought I could easily in these 2 days accomplish these things, but now being sick, that's going to set me back. It's going to, you know, it's unfulfilled expectations of yourself. And so that's hard for us to kind of let go of sometimes. But with burnout, we tend to think that it's just about overwork. And overwork is absolutely a huge part of burnout, right? If you're overworked, burnout, stress, overwhelm, all that stuff is going to show up. But our research and a lot of other research out there shows that burnout really is related, again, to unmet needs. If it's so important to me to do work that I feel is meaningful and impactful, and I am just doing boring admin kind of work day after day, that is going to lead to that boredom, right? There are all sorts of different parts of burnout. That's going to create a certain type of burnout. Same thing. If I want to feel valued, like I matter, and I feel completely invisible at work, that's its own kind of burnout. So again, when we look at the emotional experience we're having at work or our team is having, it's so important to take a step back and ask ourselves, what do I need that I do not have? Because that is the underlying, that's the root cause. That's not the surface level stuff. It's really getting to the underneath problem that we need to solve. And sometimes that's more difficult to solve than something that you could just kind of put a little Band-Aid on. But the Band-Aid isn't really going to fix it.
I think that's so clutch because everybody does think it's overwork. So it's not about the volume of work, but it's also about the nature of work and how well it's aligned with your motives.
Yes.
Like that's a huge change in like the perspective on burnout. It's huge.
I mean, I especially love that because
culturally, you know, you look at the tech sector, you look at all of these startups, for example, and you've got a bunch of young people who are so passionate about the work that they do. And they may or may not be working hours beyond what we would think would, you know, would constitute too many hours. However, they're not burned out because they are just engaged. They are excited. They are living and breathing their work to a certain extent. They're socializing out of the office. They're going out to events. They're traveling on business. And you do find that energy is still there. Whereas when you are finding it a little bit more ho-hum, as many of us of a certain age may have found throughout our careers, definitely. That's an amazing framework when I just think about the difference, right? It's not about hours. It's about nature. It's about engagement. It's about alignment to my own personal values.
Yes. No, absolutely. It's, if you looked at the hours, for example, like Jennifer, you alluded to back many years ago, the beginning of my career, I worked in a really terrible toxic workplace and there were so many things wrong with it, but one was overwork. And if you looked at the amount of hours then, and you looked at the amount of hours at one point last year, I was spending writing my book and running the business, they probably weren't too far off, but I wasn't burnt out last year. I was going after my dream. I was aligning with my motives. So sure, there were some moments I felt tired. Absolutely. But overall, I was invigorated. I was energized. I was excited. I didn't care as much about going on vacation or going to brunch or doing whatever. I was like, no, I want to sit here and finish my book. That's what I want to do. But many years ago, my motives weren't being met. I was just grinding day in and day out to not achieve anything I wanted to achieve. So the reasoning, the motivation, the energy behind it is so different. And that's another really important part of just work-life harmony in general from the research we've done, is to say we have to stop kind of shooting on people when it comes to any of these motives, because we're all in different places in our lives and they're all going to mean different things to each person, and there is no right or wrong way.
So what do you say to the person who is not necessarily feeling that level of engagement? You know, it's nice to say, Kelly, I should just go find another job. But what's the real advice?
Well, there's a few different things you can do. One thing we often say is motives are met both in thought and action. So it's taking a step back and going, what's my mindset, my belief system, my values around some of my needs? And is that helping or hurting getting them met, right? Whether it's about growth or it's about flexibility or autonomy or even fun, you know, what are my mindset issues there that I potentially need to change that are on me? And maybe where's their misalignment with the beliefs and thoughts of the people around me? And how can I maybe bridge that gap? So mindset can be a really big thing. And then action, both small and big. So what are the small habits? What are the little to-dos along with the big, hard things? Maybe it's having that tough conversation with your boss. Maybe it's setting that boundary that isn't super comfortable. You know, what do you need to do and not do? And that's what we help you do with your five motives in your report, is go, how can you create a real tangible action plan where you're outlining based on each motive, the things that are in your control to do so that you can make your work life better now. And sure, some people might look at their motives and go, yeah, I should be walking out the door. I absolutely 100% should, but that's not everybody by any means. And just because you're not having your desired emotional experience doesn't mean there isn't a lot usually that you can do to make your motives be stronger in your current position.
So let me ask you, Kelly, if I was to replace that word hustle with something, what would you recommend? Instead of thinking about hustle, what should people be thinking about when they relate to work?
I really love sustainability. It's been a big word in my vocabulary the last few years, because I have the tendency to sometimes be that person who can naturally lean towards, Jennifer, like you were saying, that mindset of I got to do it in the grind, and it's just kind of ingrained in me. But I find that that can lead to burnout, that it can lead to not enjoying my work as much, not producing the best work I want to produce. So when I step back and think about what's sustainable, if not just what I can accomplish in the next 48 hours, but what over the next 3 weeks is going to help me create my best output, my best energy, the best results, then I start to show up a little bit differently. Then I'm more likely to rejuvenate. Then I'm more likely to take a step back and go, okay, how am I doing on this motive? Or what do I need to say no to? What do I need to say yes to? So sustainability to me is a much better approach for long-term success than short-term hustle.
I love that. That's amazing. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question because this is coming up a lot these days, right? With the new hybrid work environment and hours of work and where you should work, the big question that I'm asked regularly, I'm just curious about your opinion, the four-day work week. What do you think? I mean, it's working quite well in Europe, and there's been a number of smaller companies in Canada who have started to implement. I'm not sure. I'll be honest with you. My worry about the four-day work week is that people will be doing 5 days of work in four. That's not necessarily what is actually happening. And I would love to chat more about the opportunities available and really learn how it's done well. But I'm curious, how does that relate to your research?
Well, I think it comes back to the very difficult truth that one size fits all just does not work. So there can be team dynamics and businesses where a four-day work week could work really well, but that may absolutely not be true for a different type of business, a different type of team. And that's what makes things difficult, is what works really well for one person isn't going to necessarily work for you. And like you were saying, it can sometimes look nice on paper, but then we find, oh, well, I'm really stressed because I still have work to get done and people didn't get back to me on Thursday, but we have Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, right? Friday's off. I'm not allowed to send, someone says to me, I'm not allowed to send messages. I get dinged if I don't, but I have to get the work done, but it couldn't really get done in the time that was allotted. So I'm in a catch 22 and I can't win.
Right.
So some of our research shows that people approach communication, their work performance styles very differently. You know, we have people who are integrators who blend work and life, which are more like me. We have people who do better as separators, really keeping them separate. We have some people who'd prefer actually a 6-day work week. I'd rather work half days, 6 days a week when my mind is really fresh in the morning and take the afternoons off. Someone else might prefer the 4-day. Someone else might prefer the 5-day. So the question becomes, how are you going to try to incorporate all these different work-life styles to the best of your ability based on the people who are working for you? And the way you get there is through, again, knowing what's important to them and then having the conversations to understand and go, hey, guys, I get it. You might want a 3-day work week, but this person wants a 6-day work week. We're going to have to figure out how we compromise. How do we develop the best strategy that's going to work for us? Maybe Tuesday, Wednesdays are the days everyone has to be available for meetings. And then the other days, it can kind of be a you choose your own adventure kind of thing. That might work in our business. But without having that understanding and then the conversations and leaning on your people to help you come up with solutions, not putting it top down, but making it a collective conversation, you're not going to be able to figure out what the best solution is for you.
Awesome. Well, I really hope that our listeners are, you know, encouraged by this conversation to open their mind to the idea that there is definitely not a one size fits all. I'm sure many of them are like, oh, you know, again, this just sounds more complicated, but it's obviously a bit foolish not to kind of explore how you might be able to improve everything in terms of work life for your people by at least considering some of what we've talked about today. So Kelly, every episode we ask our guests the same set of questions. We call it the rapid fire section. So we're going to move into that. I know it sounds scary, but you'll be fine. The first question is, what's the one thing you believe small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
It's to actually prioritize their people. That sounds simple, but when you really take a step back and look at the time spent in the day, look at how much time is actually spent on your people versus on doing the tasks or on your clients. And you'd be really surprised as to how little you actually are maybe prioritizing your people who are the ones to go help the clients, put out the fires, deliver the results.
So true. So true.
Well, and isn't it the founder of the Four Seasons who said, I don't spend 1 minute worrying about the client. I think about my people. And if I take care of my people, they will take care of our guests. So very similar, right?
Yes. Well said. Absolutely. Yes.
Excellent. All right, Kelly, now we're going to get into a little bit of fun. Tell us about your first job.
Very first. I think my first real person job was you know, it wasn't like the intern job. It was like the, you know, the first, like, ooh, I'm putting on a suit. And like, this is my first real job, was in outside sales for a newspaper company in Chicago, which is just wild to think about how much the world has changed from relying on the newspaper, the local newspaper, the way we used to. But yeah, that was my first real job.
And your best job.
Ooh, I'm living it right now. I'm lucky to say I'm living it right now.
Fantastic.
Growing Motives Met, writing my book, helping people be happier and healthier at work is definitely my favorite job I've ever had.
For sure. Okay. Biggest mess up at work.
God, I don't know if there's one moment that stands out. I think just at one point I was in such crazy chaos. I call it Mad Men for Modern Times. I mean, it was wild. It was like drinking at 10 a.m. before a client meeting, screaming matches, no things. I would hold my pee literally for hours. I was running from my, it was like, it could be a TV show. But at the time it felt normal, right? Like this just was how it was. And you get on board and you get it done, or like you get out, you know, be strong. Don't let it get to you. So, I mean, everything was a mess because it was just chaos. And the fact that I just drowned in it day after day was just, to me, that's like the biggest thing I would never want to repeat, or anyone else to ever repeat. Thinking,
so basically
that,
you fell for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like drink the Kool-Aid. It was like, I'm going to climb the corporate ladder and I'm going to toughen up and I can pull all-nighters for work and I can deal with the crazy clients and I can, and it's, no, that is not healthy. It's not sustainable. It's not the way work should be.
Absolutely not. And so what was your best learning from that experience on Mad Men?
I think to me, it would be that we spend a third of our lives at work, that we cannot have well-being in our lives if we don't have well-being at work.
It
just had a detrimental effect physically, emotionally, physically, mentally. I mean, just everything, because it's such a significant part of our lives that it bleeds into our lives outside of work, to our families, to our loved ones, to our communities, and to the bottom line of the company, right? But it's too big of a part of your life. And it's too important to settle for not having the well-being that you deserve.
And our final question, which is Jennifer's favorite, is your quickest quit.
This is a tough one. I'm trying to think. What did I quit really quick? Nothing is coming to mind.
This is a podcast of overachievers. Nobody really quits anything on here.
Like, I don't know.
I've got some guests who like have stumbled in life.
I'm going to come up with one. I think that's the thing. I don't view it as quitting. It's like, if I don't like it, it's like, I'm not going to do it.
I like that. That's a good reframing.
I just am kind of like, hey, if I'm not good, if I don't like it, like not worth my time. You know, there's a million other things I want to do with my time. Not worth my time. You know what I mean?
It wasn't the newspaper one.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I stuck out in that job, in that outside sales job. I was in the little pumps, in the suit, in the below zero Chicago weather, going door to door selling. I stuck it out.
Oh my God. Good for
you.
You
are a stronger woman than I. That's for sure. Kelly, thank you so much for spending time with us and helping us to really better understand and apply all of this amazing research. Can you tell us a little bit about where our audience can access you and where they could get your book and do a little bit of a plug?
Sure. Yeah. The title of the book is Work Life Well Lived. The subtitle is The Motives Met, No BS Pathway to Well-Being at Work. You can find it wherever books are sold. Most people like to pick it up on Amazon, but it's even on TikTok shops. You can find me on TikTok if that's your jam. If not, I'm on LinkedIn, spend a lot of time there. You can find me there, just Kelly Mackins, search me on LinkedIn. And our website, motivesmet.com, has all sorts of information about the assessment and a lot of great freebies we were talking about, like our work-life harmony playbook, our research guide and culture roadmap. So you can check out that stuff there and sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss out on getting it delivered to your inbox.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you love this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.